Hey everybody, welcome to F This Movie, the podcast for people. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight for the very last episode of F This Movie of 2011 by the lovely, the beautiful, the talented Erica.
Hi.
Bromley, my wife. You thought I was going to say Doug, didn't you? That's usually how I introduce Doug.
He is lovely and beautiful. And what else did you
talented
say? Talented.
And pregnant. Doug is pregnant.
Doug is pregnant.
So congratulations, Doug, everyone. Yay! The cat's out of the bag.
Wait, no. People are going to think that he and his wife are really expecting. We have to make it
no,
very
I mean
clear.
Doug himself is pregnant.
Well,
a
I
la
was,
the movie Junior.
I was going to name Junior as one of my top five.
That was my big segue. So that's awesome. We're talking about your favorite movies tonight as a part of our special series running up to our 100th episode.
My favorite movies?
Your favorite movies. But before we do that, I have to get all that nonsense out of the way, like the fact that you can find our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com, and you can become a fan of us or like us on Facebook.
Facebook.com/fthismovie.
You should see this movie. It's called The Social Something. I don't remember. But okay. It's about Facebook. Right?
What's Facebook?
Face Space. It's about Face Space.
Face Place.
The Face Place. Was that SVU?
SVU.
Facebook.com/FThisMovie. Follow us on Twitter at Twitter.com/FThisMovie. Find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie.
What if they want to email you?
Oh, easy. FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com. And they should email us because, as you may or may not know at this point, on the run-up to our 100th episode, we're running a contest, the F This Movie Win Our Stuff contest. If you want to know more about it, go to fthismovie.blogspot.com and find the link to the contest. But I'll tell you a little bit about it right now. Like, you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com your favorite moment on the show, your favorite episode of the show, your favorite whatever from the show, and we read them on the show, and then at the end of the whole run, we throw them into a hat and we pick them out. And people win DVDs from our collections.
From our collection?
Ours.
Because your collection is also my collection.
Well, right.
We have a shared collection.
So you get sort of a joint prize.
What if you try to give away something that I don't want to give away?
I will clear it with you first.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so that's kind of neat that you get you would technically get a DVD from both of us.
Yeah.
Which is like a special prize. And
even better.
And a DVD that's been touched by, I'll say it, the most attractive person on the F This Movie crew.
Wow.
That's you.
Thanks.
I'm not talking about myself. One of the prizes up
I
for grabs.
I do have the best curves.
You do. One of the prizes up for grabs is a brand new Blu-ray of The Rocketeer, courtesy of Joel Young at therocketeer.net. Thank
Woo-hoo.
You so much, Joel Young. And everybody go to therocketeer.net. I know JB has said he's throwing in a Blu-ray of The Nightmare Before Christmas because
nice.
He doesn't like that movie. You can read all about his feelings about that movie in his weekly column, Shitting on the Classics.
I was going to say, I think he shat on that.
He did twice, actually, if we're going to be exact.
Really? Twice?
Yeah, twice.
How do you shit on something twice?
He did a little bit of a rerun. It's
okay.
Not important, everyone.
Oh,
he just really doesn't like it, I guess, is what I'm saying. But let me read a few new entries into the contest for this week. Like this one from, I'm going to say his name wrong, so I apologize, Brett Lashaway. My favorite moment is a silly one, but since you're asking, last year when you did the Scary Movies Challenge, I submitted a review for Maximum Overdrive, which I had just reviewed for my own blog. I thought it was sort of amusing, but when I read the other 7-word reviews, I thought that it wasn't up to the quality everyone else had provided. And yet, when you guys read some out for the first time, the very first one you read was Trucks Kill People, Then People Kill Trucks, and I was tickled. Not only was mine read, it was the very first review read. Yeah, it's probably silly, but it made my day. Most of my friends don't care much about movies, so listening to you guys is the closest I get to having someone around who cares as much as I do. So that's awesome. Thank you, Brett. And that's one of the best parts about doing F This Movie, is that it's like talking with all your friends about movies, even friends you don't know, in other states, in other countries. And it's been super awesome reading everybody's emails and Facebook comments and everything. That's my favorite part of the whole thing.
He has a really good point, though. I think sometimes it's hard when you have a passion for something and
like
your friends.
Like Maximum Overdrive?
Yes, and your friends don't love it, and you feel alone. And
yeah.
Thanks to the interwebs, you're not alone.
You can find other people who have
not
seen.
Alone.
That is beautiful. Is that Free Willy?
Yes.
Okay.
I think.
I never saw that movie.
I didn't either.
Or this one from Emmerich Salzberg, who says, congratulations on 100 hilarious and informative episodes, Patrick and company. You are the company.
Hmm.
If I had to pick a moment specifically from the podcast, it'd have to be the on-air brainstorm you guys did regarding what to put in the speech balloon for the ecstatic young theater goer that appears atop the Watch and Trailers with Doug blog entries. I noticed you changed it up for Christmas, which was a nice touch. However, the most memorable moment for me happened when I was introducing some of my hipster friends to the podcast. The latest episode that week happened to be the Plan 9 from Outer Space podcast, where one of you was railing on cynical film watchers, I think it was me, who watch movies because they're bad. My friends thought I was sending them a message and immediately forced me into sitting through an episode of the short-lived but seemingly never-ending show Cop Rock. I don't know how those bastards obtained a copy, but I think the real cops should refocus their drug war efforts on further distribution. Happy holidays. So there's so much in that message that I love, including the fact that, like, we made a point about watching things ironically, and
his friends
thought that he was somehow sending them a message, so they made him watch something ironic. It's like missing the point completely.
Aww.
But thank you for turning your hipster friends onto the show. I understand if they don't like it, because we are pretty staunchly anti-hipster on the show.
I still love the hipsters.
Do you?
I was just trying to be nice.
Oh, yeah, all right.
I don't want his friends to feel left out.
No, I don't either.
Let them be hipsters if they want to be hipsters.
All right, fine. and lastly, like this one from Josh Suko. Wow, I didn't bother emailing after the Broken Computer podcast because I assumed we would all reply with the same one-word response. Haverick. and then he quotes me saying, you know that this goes on the internet and people listen to it. Great stuff. Thank you, Josh. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the Haverick reference, go back and listen to our Top Gun podcast. That is the second nomination for Haverick for the favorite moment on the show as well.
Yeah.
So it's creeping in on Marcon being kidnapped as everyone's favorite moment on the show.
Oh, no.
So step it up.
Hi, Josh.
Is what I'm saying. Step it up.
All right. Should I give birth on the podcast?
You got to do something.
Would that be
memorable?
Good for podcast Maybe. Memories and podcast ratings?
Should we do like 9 months?
Podcast awards?
We could do Knocked Up.
Do they give awards to podcasts?
She's Having a Baby.
You're stealing my list.
Do they give awards to podcasts?
9 months.
I'm sure. I already said 9 months.
Oh, shoot.
What would the podcast awards be called?
Don't they have something called Webbies? But is that for advertising?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't either.
I'm not very cool when it comes to computers or life.
Podcast awards.
So thank you everybody for your submissions. Please continue to write in fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com your favorite moments from the show. We will continue to read them and of course enter you into a drawing to win our stuff. JB has already said that he is putting together an insane box for one of the winners.
Wow.
So
everything in the box goes to one person? Or are you going to split it up?
We're going to move stuff around, okay. But like I think okay. JB's box will go to one person.
Oh,
you know
wow.
what I mean? So I'm trying to tempt people into really getting on their computers and writing in.
I had a dirty joke to make there, but I...
About JB's box?
About...
Your box?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. What's wrong with you?
But that's inappropriate for
what is wrong with you?
Family podcast for hipsters and other people.
Hey, before I forget, thank you to Bradley Lang and everybody at Modern Myth Media, who do a podcast that everyone should listen to if you like comic books and movies and comic book movies. On their most recent episode, Bradley was kind enough to encourage all of their listeners to find us on Facebook and like us, and we've seen our numbers jump up thanks to the wonderful listeners of Modern Myth Media Podcast. So thanks, Bradley, and everybody over there, keeping the podcast love alive.
Woohoo! I like hearing about friendly podcasts.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
All of our experiences with this movie have been pretty positive, so that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Bew... Have you seen anything lately?
I have. I saw The Descendants, and
yes.
So did you. But
yes.
You've already talked about that on a podcast.
A little bit, not a ton.
Well, we don't have George Clooney, Hawaii.
I think it's possible that you liked that movie more than I did.
I did, yeah. I think I liked that it just seemed like a fresh idea
mm-hmm.
to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, a different story.
George Clooney being a widow, you mean?
He probably was a widow before.
I don't know if he was, but I feel like you support the idea of George Clooney being a widow.
No,
so
I don't
you
want
can,
anyone to be a widow.
Well, I know you don't actually want people to be a
George
widow,
Clooney
but I feel like...
George Clooney should come over one night and
I just feel like
just
you want him to be a widow so you could
here.
Like swoop in and be like,
oh.
I'll never die, George Clooney. I promise I will live forever.
I would like to touch
maybe his you should kiss
facial
me.
Hair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, does he have facial hair? He doesn't in The Descendants.
Doesn't he have stubble sometimes?
He probably does.
He should.
He's very masculine.
He should. I know. Oh, gosh, yeah. All
right, relax. Last time it was okay. John Hamm. Now it's George Clooney. Anybody else you want to fawn over on
but
the
But I did
interwebs?
Like that movie. I thought yes. it was well written and just fresh. I don't know. What else did I see lately? I saw, Matt Damon. What did I just watch?
The Adjustment Bureau?
Yes, I did. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, we just watched that last
yes.
night.
Yes. But I couldn't remember the title. I'm pregnant. I'm just kidding. I don't really use that as an excuse all the time.
Just on podcasts, everyone.
Only on podcasts. I liked it. I know today we started to talk about it, and then we abruptly
cut off our conversation. What did I say?
Save it for the podcast.
That's right. That's what I do. With almost anything that we talk about, which is weird, because you're not on the podcast all the time.
Right, and we're not always talking about movies.
No, I know, but it's just like, you're like, what do you want for dinner? I'm like, save it for the podcast. Right. And we have gone, seriously, 6 months without eating dinner. I mean, we've eaten lunch and breakfast. But
I've had a lot of ice cream.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not technically a
chocolate,
dinner.
Chocolate, cookies. Are you hungry? okay, so Matt Damon, I thought he was good. I thought the movie was good. And when I asked you about it today, we both kind of were saying, yeah. We liked it. We can't really figure out how much we liked it.
Yeah.
And it was reminding me, it was giving me a vibe of Adrian Brody.
Mm-hmm.
The
King Kong. the pianist.
Adrian Brody and the cute, cute girl who married Daniel Craig.
Rachel Weisz.
Yes.
Adrian Brody and Rachel Weisz were in a movie together.
Mm-hmm.
What was that movie?
Oh my gosh, come on, you know, we like this movie.
Yeah.
You love this movie.
Oh, yeah, The Brothers Bloom.
Yeah.
I could not picture the two on screen together. Really, that's what it reminded you of.
No, not the...
Just the people wearing hats.
Not the subject matter.
Yeah, just the hats.
Something about the...
Headwear. Hats.
The quirkiness. No, mm-hmm. There's not a lot of quirkiness going on with Matt Damon in this movie.
Was it the hats?
It had nothing to do with the subject matter. It had everything to do with the...
Starts with H. A-T-S. Hats.
I don't even know.
I'm still trying to decide how I feel about the Adjustment Bureau, because there's things about it I really liked. Like, I liked all the scenes with Matt Damon and Emily Blunt. I thought they were really good together. Matt Damon is pretty much good in everything.
He is.
And I never consider him like one of my favorite actors, but every time I see a movie, right? And every time I see a movie with Matt Damon, I'm like, wow, he's really good in this. All the stuff with him and Emily Blunt was great, and it reminded me of when we went to see. I think I've talked about this before on the show. Do you remember? I think it was on our honeymoon.
Oh,
and I won't make too many references like this. I've told that story. I won't make too many references like this because people don't like it when we schmoop out. But I think we were on our honeymoon and we saw Collateral.
Yes.
And there's, like, the first 15 minutes of Collateral is Jamie Foxx and Jada Pinkett Smith just, like, talking. And I really liked it. They had good chemistry together, and what they were saying was interesting.
Right.
And then I remembered, like, oh, wait, but this is a movie about, like, Tom Cruise with gray hair as a hitman. And I was a little bummed out. They're like, oh, we have to get to that still.
Right.
And the Adjustment Bureau was reminding me a little bit of that. Like, every time Matt Damon and Emily Blunt were together, I was like, I want to watch this movie. And they're like, oh, but wait, it's a movie about secret people who manipulate things so that everything goes according to plan.
Right.
So it's like, it's a weird movie because it's...
And I think that, like, that aspect of it reminded me, the tone of those scenes reminded me a little bit of Brothers Bloom because of the way that movie sort of unfolded. I don't know. I didn't know where it was going.
Right.
And I didn't know, like, what these men in hats were doing, you know, like, in the beginning. So, like, the way it keeps unfolding. And there was something about the tone. There was something about the look of the movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But then, the scenes between Emily Blunt and Matt Damon, I really liked. Like you said, I liked their romance and...
You always love the romance.
I do. But I do. But let's not talk about romantic comedies.
No, gosh, no. It's a weird movie because, like, I want to be cynical because that is my default mode.
Oh, you?
But it's like, it's a movie that you almost can't be cynical about because it's so weirdly sort of optimistic about love conquers all, but it's also, like, really silly.
That's the other part that reminded me of The Brothers Bloom.
Yeah. it's like silly though, and like earnest in this way where you're just like, you have to be willing to go along with this premise that these guys in hats are manipulating things so it goes according to plan. And I think there's a lot of people who it's like, oh, I can't, you know, it presents sort of a sci-fi idea, but not in sort of this dark post Blade Runner sci-fi way. We're so used to most science fiction being sort of brooding and heavy and, and this movie isn't. And so it's a weird adjustment to have to make. I don't know if seeing it again would make me like it better or not.
I think it would.
Yeah.
That's my prediction. All right. So watch it again. I think you'll like it more.
Man, but I have so much else to watch.
I know. I think it's the type of movie that a lot of people won't love, but I find, how could you hate it?
I think a lot of people do.
Really?
Yeah.
They hate it?
Yeah, because I think it turns a corner where it becomes so sort of goofy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's never done, you know, as a comedy.
Right,
like,
right.
And I think it's too much for a lot of people. And, they, you know, they're not wrong. It's just sort of depends on your sensibilities. But
you mentioned Collateral.
I did.
Let's talk about Tom Cruise.
All right.
Have you talked about Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol already?
Again, briefly. Oh. I think on last week's show, I just encouraged everyone to go see it. But now you, as the number one Tom Cruise fan on this movie, do you have some words you want to say about it?
It's probably nothing that people haven't said already. It was really fun. It was action-packed. I loved the thrill ride aspect of it, but I also thought it was cheesy.
No, come on.
But I thought, so I loved the action. I love action movies.
You do?
All right, let's talk about Tom Cruise for a second, though. He does his own stunts, which is crazy, and I'm sure there are a lot of other people who do their own stunts as well. Maybe they don't get the same amount of press for it, but he was climbing the tallest building in the world.
Yeah.
And swinging around. And then I saw the supporting cast on the Today Show one morning while I was waking up. And I just opened my eyes and thought, Mission Impossible. But Tom Cruise wasn't there. And there they were, Paula Patton and some other guys. And, oh, Simon Pegg and the other guy.
Jeremy Renner?
Nope.
Hmm. Who's the other guy?
I don't think it was him. I don't think it was Jeremy Renner.
All right. Somebody else.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I can picture him.
All right.
He has like a little bit of a mousy look.
Tom Cruise.
No. What? Hmm. Mousy? Oh.
Jeremy Renner?
No. Okay. So they were on the Today Show talking about how exciting and scary it was when they were watching him do this stuff and just the thought of like if something went wrong, they might all be out of a job. And they were just making jokes. But just thinking about what he does, I don't know. And people give him such a hard time because he has been such a weirdo at times in his career, more so the second half of it than the first half. But I've been a long time.
You have.
A long time. You've seen him student of Tom Cruise.
The bad and the good.
When I was once on vacation as a young girl in Wisconsin Dells, the only thing I wanted at the gift shop wherever we were in some little town was the giant Tom Cruise posters book, and I got it.
Nice.
It was so great.
Yeah. Was it just his movie posters, or was it just pictures of him?
Pictures of him.
Sure.
Sometimes from movies, mm-hmm. sometimes just him photographed somewhere.
Sure.
Oh, mm-hmm. There's a really nice one from Cocktail.
I don't believe
Top
you.
Gun.
I probably don't believe that anything associated with Cocktail is good.
Well, that's because you just don't get it.
Okay. No, that's possible.
Cocktail's awful, I know.
That's possible. You, I believe, introduced me to Cocktail. And that movie is unwatchable, and you
have
it memorized.
Did I make you watch it?
I don't know if you made me. It was one of those like, because you loved it, we watched it.
When I was in grade school, I was watching that movie once with my parents. And I had already seen it at my friend's house for a sleepover. But during the wild bedroom scene, my parents made me leave the room.
Mm. There's a wild bedroom scene in Cocktail?
Mm-hmm, with Gina Gershwin.
Gershwin?
Gershwin.
Gina Gershwin. Gershon. I don't remember there being a wild bed. I remember a bedroom scene
wild.
With Gina
They're
Gershon
like...
in Bound.
Oh.
Which is awesome. But
no,
I don't remember
Cocktail. Yes, they meet at the bar, poetry, something. Yeah. She's a photographer. I don't remember. Yeah. Then they go back to her place, I think, and they're literally rolling in and out of the sheets on the floor.
That's
it's
how
crazy.
People do it.
Yes, right. Yeah. It's natural.
Nice.
Natural, yes. Why are we talking about Cocktail? Oh, Tom Cruise is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone's heard the story about him driving the bus
Yeah.
But
Numathon, I think I did.
But Numathon, I'm sure you have. If not, Google
it.
He drove
the bus over to the screening.
He's just cool. He's saved people's lives before.
That's right. I like that you know, again, I've said this about him before, but I love the way that you can always feel him willing a movie to succeed, like,
yes,
by any means necessary. And I think the Ethan Hunt character in Mission Impossible 4 is so much an extension of Tom Cruise, where it's just like, things constantly go wrong, but he never gives up, even when it's, you know, again, not to invoke the title, but like, it's impossible. Like, you can't win at this point. You're out of time.
Right.
You are miles away from where you need to be, whatever. There are so many, the movie just keeps throwing obstacles at him and at the team, and they keep, that movie's so much fun.
Right.
I really liked it. I don't know. Speaking of Cocktail, though, let's talk about your favorite movies, because that's what we're here to talk about tonight, is your
Cocktail.
Five of your favorite movies.
Top Gun.
Not necessarily your five favorite
Doug
movies.
Doug gets it.
Doug does get it. Doug might be the only one who gets it. That movie's horrible.
Doug, where are you?
I like Tom Cruise enough, but like, he made Risky Business, I like, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he makes another movie I like until, what, maybe A Few Good Men?
Yeah.
Maybe Jerry Maguire. I mean, that's like a 15-year period where he doesn't make a movie that I
so
like.
So you didn't like Days with Thunder?
I did not.
Or that movie where he's Irish with Nicole Kidman? Far and Away, yeah.
I did not.
No, I know. Gosh, I remember that movie. I remember when he was on Oprah promoting that movie, and it was like, I thought it was such a, I mean, I was really young, and I thought, oh, this is going to be such an event movie. It's going to be such a big deal.
I think it was like the last movie, the last wide release put out in 70mm. So it like does sort of have, it's sort of this weird historical footnote,
right?
But not because it's any good.
No, I know.
And I just remembered The Color of Money, which I do like.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise is in. Right. So there is a movie in there that I like in the 80s.
What about the vampire movie?
No, I don't like that movie.
I didn't think so.
No.
I
really don't start liking Tom Cruise movies.
Until Jerry Maguire.
Until, I guess, Jerry Maguire, and then especially like 99 when he does Magnolia and Eyes Wide Shut. And,
right.
Because even the first Mission Impossible, I don't love. It's Brian De Palma. I should, right? But I don't.
Yeah, you should.
Thank you. Well, let's talk about your five of your favorite movies.
Okay, so Cocktail, Top Gun. I'm kidding. For the record, I love Tom Cruise. I always have, because I was very, very young, and I'm allowed to like someone like that when I'm young. Because
I just always thought, Nancy McKeon, right? But you don't. I'm not still holding.
She hasn't produced a body of work that has kept her in your mind or your love. No, but I never it wasn't the type of crush.
We gotta stop.
This is too much Tom Cruise, right?
Yeah, this is a
I never wanted to like marry him, a la Katie Holmes,
right?
Or maybe I did.
You probably did.
No, I just wanted him to like be. I remember thinking I could babysit his kids and just be a part of his family.
This is like the same line that Rosie O'Donnell used to use.
Yes, so. She wanted him to like mow her lawn and just hang out. So am I a lesbian?
It's possible.
Oh.
Is what I'm saying.
All right. So, well, Rosie lives in Chicago now.
Okay.
So I could try to talk to her about it and figure out my life.
Work out your feelings.
Okay. So, my top five movies.
Yeah, okay.
9 months, she's having a baby, Junior.
One of the movies that you would have wanted to talk about was Wuthering Heights, right?
Yes.
The original Wuthering Heights, starring, who's in that? Burt Lancaster?
No! Merle Oberon.
And Merle.
Laurence Olivier.
Laurence Olivier, who played Zeus in Clash of the Titans?
If you say so.
That is literally one of the few Laurence Olivier performances I've ever seen in a
movie.
I've seen a few others, like Marathon Man
and
stuff.
I started watching Wuthering Heights when I was really, really little, because my mom had a copy and played it for me and loved it. And it was one of those things, like that, one of those memories that I remember. There's quite a few movies like that that I remember kind of learning from my mom's love for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved it. I mean, I didn't have any other friends in grade school who were watching a 1939.
That's surprising to me. You didn't get around the lunch table talking about
I had a couple of friends.
Wuthering Heights?
No.
No, I know you had friends, just not ones that were watching Wuthering Heights.
Yeah, no.
No, not so much.
But I loved it. And so obviously we're talking about grade school, and I would go back between, I would watch that movie, I would watch Annie, I would watch E.T., I would watch Grease. Those were the movies sort of like on repeat in my house until I was maybe in fourth mm-hmm. grade, and I expanded my horizons.
To include what?
Can't Buy Me Love,
yeah,
John Waters Hairspray, and Ghostbusters?
There it is. I was just looking for Can't Buy Me Love. Here's the thing, people. If you're ever lucky enough to live with Erica, be married to Erica.
It's so awesome.
ABC Family shows Can't Buy Me Love like a madman.
But and, it's all caught up.
Whatever. I'm just saying, if it's on and she's in the other room, I will, without fail, put it on and almost count the seconds until she recognizes what it is. And it's not the kind of thing where it's like you have to wait for a super memorable line of dialogue in Can't Buy Me Love. It could be the most slight little music cue that transitions from one scene into another. Almost any sound in Can't Buy Me Love, she will be able to identify as Can't Buy Me Love. And to a lesser extent, you could do the same thing with Cocktail. But Can't Buy Me Love is really the one where it's like, how do you recognize that this is Can't Buy Me Love?
Like that one little bass note that you played once.
Yeah,
that
right,
came running
right,
in the room.
So Wuthering Heights would have been on your list.
Yes.
However, it is not available on DVD.
No.
I believe we have a VHS copy somewhere in the house, but...
Yeah, somewhere.
That would require having a VCR also in the house, and
right.
We don't really. So, because I have never seen it and don't really have access to watching it...
We're not going to include
not, yeah,
it.
Yeah, you did not put it on the list, but it deserved mention.
And for the record, you know, again, I was so young when I started watching that movie.
I got it.
I know, but so I hadn't
you
read the book.
So
I hadn't read the book because I'm sure there's
cool.
someone out there who has read
Ooh,
the book.
All I like was The Dark Crystal. I had puppets. You were watching black and white movies. You're so
Yeah, I'm glad
smart.
We spent 10 minutes talking about Cocktail before this. So many people have already turned it off. I had never read the book. I'm sure there are people out there listening saying, I've read the
they
book.
They made a book out of that movie?
And the movie doesn't do it justice. Or, you know, so the book has nothing
people
to do
douches.
With my... True, sometimes. Not everybody, not all
I didn't
all
say
people.
Everybody's a douche.
Not F this movie
people.
Listeners.
No, absolutely not.
Best.
You guys are not.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just... I love the story.
You love the love.
I love the love.
You love
yeah,
the love.
Yeah, and Heathcliff and his sadness. Oh.
Yes, and you loved when Heathcliff. Merle Oberon was like, I bet I could spook you.
yeah.
So.
Heath Ledger, I believe, was named after Heathcliff.
He died, you know.
I know.
I'm sorry to break it to you. Let's talk about your number five favorite movie then.
Wait a second. Oh, I wanted to say earlier.
How much longer do
this
you
is going to be...
do the podcast before we actually talk about what we're supposed to talk about?
Not only is this the first podcast that I'm recording while pregnant, but it's also the first podcast that we're going to fight on. because I hate that he's making me pick five movies. I
yes.
think it's so hard. When people ask me, what's your favorite movie?
Yeah.
It's so hard to say one.
No, it isn't. It's Back to the Future.
Oh, okay, I give you that.
Dunsies. No, everybody has this problem.
I know.
If you're a person who loves movies, you can't
just
narrow it down
right
to a couple. But
and even
just,
like okay, so I'm giving you five, but they're not.
Right.
I mean, I feel like I'm leaving so much out that.
Right, of course you are.
It's
that's
not
why
telling
I said,
of who I am.
That's why I said
as a person.
No,
isn't this what the listeners want to know?
You spending a half hour talking about Cocktail is telling of who you are as a person.
Oh, great.
That's why at the start of the show I said five of your favorite movies.
Right.
I didn't
they're
say
not in order.
No, I know.
Okay.
That's okay. You don't have to rank them in order.
Okay, no, right.
I didn't say your five favorite movies, because obviously you have more favorite movies. Like, we're not going to talk about Bird on a Wire, right? But that's in there. That's
oh
in there,
oh, my gosh. He's bringing up all of like, my guilty pleasure. I grew up with this movie, so I love it for these reasons type of thing.
Let's talk about actual number five. Again, not
ranking. Number five.
Can you just let me identify the movies numerically without everyone?
I told
understands.
You guys. See, this is our first fight ever.
It really is,
and it's on recording.
Thank
forever.
You guys for listening. Without everybody understands, these are not ranked, okay? But when I say you're number five, it just means number five. It's
number
not your fifth
five.
Favorite movie.
Okay. Well, since you kind of mentioned, or I mentioned earlier, Ghostbusters. When I was again young, they're my. Aunt Lori. Hey, Aunt Lori.
She doesn't,
but maybe one of her kids will.
They don't listen either.
Okay. Hi, cousins. she used to get copies of movies all the time, and I would often borrow them. And I think that my mom made a copy of her copies, or maybe I just stole her copy. But I had a VHS tape with Ghostbusters, Can't Buy Me Love, and John Waters' Hairspray. And I would watch that tape over and over and over
again. Do you hate that you always have to say John Waters Hairspray so that people don't think it's the musical?
Right. I used to not have to say that, but now I do. Yeah. And I liked the musical.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. It's you know, but... Okay, so Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Let's talk about Ghostbusters.
All right.
Well, I'm sure... have you done a podcast on Ghostbusters?
I did.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Me and JB did.
Woohoo! Hi, JB. So there's not really much to say other than it's great, it's funny, it holds up, I think. Some people don't think it does, but maybe because I love it so much.
Who possibly think it doesn't hold up?
Dumb people or just mean people? Okay. No, not dumb. No one's dumb, especially at this movie listeners, but I think there are a lot of mean people.
I think that movie totally holds up. They just... Halloween, they did like a sort of an anniversary... screening of it, like a few weeks, they did one of those digital, like, Fathom event screenings nationwide where you could go see Ghostbusters in the theater. And I know it was really popular. A lot of people went, and I didn't have an opportunity to, unfortunately. I tried more than once and never made it, but
I'm sorry.
It's okay. But it holds up.
Yeah, like. I think so too. By the way, JB and his wife made Ghostbusters costumes.
Incredibly elaborate Ghostbusters costumes.
And they were...
and wore them to the screening.
They did, and it was fantastic. And then they also wore them to our house.
Yes.
And that was great too.
That movie is crazy, like, quotable and funny and good. And we did do a whole podcast on it.
Yeah, so. I know. I don't want to spend too much time. But, like, Bill Murray, they're all... I love all the performances.
Yeah.
Even Ernie Hudson. I won't leave him out.
No, don't.
I won't leave him out.
He's important to that movie.
But sometimes people leave him out, and they just focus on the main four, and it's just not nice.
But now this is really, like, I think the only movie on your list that is a childhood favorite. Yes?
Well,
I believe the rest of them all came later, a little bit later.
Yeah, because I'm not talking about John Waters Hairspray, but I really could. Can we do a podcast on that someday?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Would anyone listen? Anyone? Right in.
I was going to say, they can't talk back to you.
Why not?
You could wait like a really long time if you want to hear anything.
Can they write in if they want to hear it?
They can. FthisMoviePodcast@gmail.com. If you're like, please do a podcast on John
Waters. Does anyone else like John
Waters
Hairspray? I love that movie. And I think it's so, it's like educational and, I just love it.
It totally taught me how to mash potatoes.
Ghostbusters. Yeah, funny. I think it's accessible. I think it's really accessible. Yeah. I think a lot of different types of moviegoers can enjoy Ghostbusters. You know, comedy... it seems these days is kind of one way or the other.
Yeah, like, definitely. And the comedies seem to be made for certain audiences.
Right. Like, Just Go With It is
it's
one
made
type.
For dummies. And then The Hangover is made for douches. But so... Ghostbusters is made for dummies and douches.
And awesome people.
Oh, right.
No, it's so funny. And Bill Murray's great. They're all great.
Everybody's great. And it's
Giant Marshmallow Man. And... it's not cheesy.
Right. No, it's a great
Slimer.
Joke. And it's you know, it's one of those 80s
I
comedies
love Ghostbusters.
That I think it's one of the few that really holds up still and isn't just like, hey, I love this movie because I loved it in 1984.
Right,
you know?
Because I can say I love Can't Buy Me Love because I watched it a million times in the 80s and grew up with it.
Right.
But it wouldn't hold up. I wouldn't watch it now and say... I don't even know if that's the best example.
But I think there's movies like, and I'm not the world's biggest Caddyshack fan, and I never have been, but, and I think people love Caddyshack, but like, I think a lot of that stems from the fact that they loved Caddyshack in 1981 or whatever. It's like, you're not really watching Caddyshack with fresh eyes and saying, this movie still works, because guess what? It doesn't.
Right.
But Ghostbusters, I think, does.
Right. The scene in the library in the beginning. Oh, Bill Murray is so funny.
I know. And he says, are you Alice menstruating right now? And nobody would tell me what that meant. I was asking my brother and my mom, like, what does that mean? And nobody, they didn't even make up an answer. They literally just avoided answering. That was so frustrating. And I was, 7 years old? I still remember that.
Right.
And nobody would tell me what that meant. And now I know all too well, everyone. Now
I know. So Ghostbusters is awesome and I love it.
Yeah, all right. Let's talk about
your
next
talked about it already.
Movie, perhaps in greater detail.
Well, should I go chronologically here?
No, do whatever you want.
Oh, I don't know. All right. The next movie I'm going to name.
Number four. Your fourth favorite movie of all time.
Oh, gosh. With the numbers.
A movie that you like just better than Goodfellas. Or
What?
Ghostbusters.
The next movie is a Martin Scorsese picture. The next film is Ghost... Good.
Well, we couldn't have done that better if we planned it.
Goodfellas, which a lot of people are probably going to roll their eyes and just be like, ah, everyone loves Goodfellas.
That is true.
Yeah, and
everyone does love Goodfellas.
Well, they should. But right, it's
with,
great.
With reason, right?
It's so good. Okay, so Goodfellas, when it came out, I was too young to see it, and when I finally got a chance, I don't remember how old I was. I think I had started working at Blockbuster, which was my dream job, and I got it. Thank you.
Really, it was that late that you saw that movie?
I think so.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was a few years before Blockbuster. I don't know. High school.
Okay.
Definitely high school.
Okay.
And I think I watched it all by myself in my family room, and I loved it so much. I loved every frame of it. I loved the way that he used the music. Mm. And as Mike Pomero, another F This Movie co-host, would agree, it has a great soundtrack. but, you know,
do you want to tell a story about the soundtrack?
I'm going to get there in 1 second. But okay. I just want to say, so Goodfellas, everyone, you know, I'm sure everyone listening has seen it. If you haven't, you need to. It's so great, although it's really hard to watch when it's cut up on, like, USA Network or TBS or something.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, Lifetime crazy. Will show it, and what's the point?
Another movie that's so quotable, on the back of the DVD case here, it says, "The best mob movie ever, Roger Ebert, Chicago Sun-Times." I agree.
Better than The Godfather, you think?
See, but here's the thing. The Godfather was also a movie that could have been on my list, but since I only was allowed to talk about five...
you say that like it's so annoyed.
I told you.
I should have made it 10 favorite movies. No. Do you know how long these shows would be?
I know.
When you factor in the half hour to talk about Cocktail? Exactly, everyone.
no, actually, I don't know. I mean, The Godfather is excellent and would have been on this list. I don't think you have to compare them.
Exactly. Well, The Godfather should be on everyone's list.
Right.
The only reason I make the comparison is because of what Roger Ebert says, because the movies themselves are apples and oranges, you know?
Right, like,
they're about the mob, but like in totally different ways. They're about totally different mobs almost, you know, even though it's the same mob.
Okay, you know how sometimes when you are really into something and then there's a movie about it, you almost automatically like that movie because it's about a subject matter that you're really interested in.
Like when I was way into deep core drilling. And then Armageddon came out, is that what you're talking about?
It was
about?
Like an answer to all of your movie wishes and dreams.
Finally. Finally, they made a movie out of this thing that I love.
But when that... Okay, so when you have that passion or interest... Interest, not passion.
Right, no.
Should we just back that up? Okay.
Whatever.
When you have an interest for something and a movie comes out about that interest, you almost automatically like it because you're just like, oh, thanks, they made this for me, you know?
Right.
Well, I've always been interested in Italian stuff and the mob. I've always had this sort of, and my family, my mother's side is all Italian and no one was in the mob, but they, you know, my grandpa grew up with other people who he knew. And there's just stories out there that I always heard growing up. And I was fascinated by it. And it's horrible, right? It's horrible to be fascinated by, you know, stories of crime, but, but I was always interested in it. Just like, I know a lot of people were in our country, especially after The Godfather was so big and whatever. So growing up Italian family, I loved hearing the stories. I loved The Godfather when I finally saw that, which was also in high school. Watched it by myself on my couch in my family room. Mm. Watched Goodfellas. Loved it so much. I may have watched it again, like, immediately or the next day. Again, every scene, every beat, the way he puts the story together, the way he does really use the music as sort of another character, you know? It really just helps everything kind of come together, and I don't know. I love Goodfellas.
Goodfellas is great. I have nothing bad to say about it. The Godfather is a really good movie, but I think Goodfellas is actually, if you're interested, if you're fascinated by the mob, I guess, if you want to, you know, for lack of a better term, I feel like Goodfellas does a better job of, like, bringing you into that world.
Right.
You know what
well,
I mean?
Like, you get more of a sense of, like, from, like, your own real life, too. Just,
maybe.
I don't know.
But it's more about, like, getting into through the back of a restaurant and shaking hands with people and what the day-to-day routine is like and sort of the power structure within, you know, because The Godfather is so far removed, it might as well be talking about, you know, kings and queens in medieval England, the way that it's sort of structured.
Right. Yeah,
but
I agree.
Goodfellas is so much more like these could be people that you know, not that you would necessarily want to, but...
But part of the reason why I love Goodfellas is, again, because I have that interest and I almost want to, I don't really want to be in that world. I mean, especially as it falls apart.
Mm.
And it always seems drugs always bring people down, man. Don't do drugs.
And that's what they say even in the movie.
I know.
That you're not supposed to do drugs.
And even in other movies. Yes. About other crimes or other families or whatever. It's always drugs.
Yeah.
But there is a part of me that like wanted to be in that world. Wanted to be in one of the families. And same with The Godfather.
That's weird.
There's a part of me that wanted to like be at the wedding and be a part of that.
Yeah, that's weird.
I know.
Can't believe you're just telling me this now. You want to be a part of organized crime?
Yeah.
Instead, you're a part of F This Movie.
It's kind of an organized thing.
Barely.
Organized banter.
Barely organized.
Organized discussion. And it helps that in in most movies, Robert De Niro looks a lot like my grandfather.
Yes.
Which you have always agreed to and agreed with. And I don't know.
The last time I watched Goodfellas, though.
And it's based on a true story.
It is. The last time I watched Goodfellas, I had this, like, notion, though, that, like, Robert De Niro is good in the movie because he's always good in the movie, and he lends the movie just a presence, you know? But, like, is he playing a character?
Right,
like,
you've mentioned this before, yeah.
We don't know really anything about him. Like,
well, he needs the in-between. We need that little bit of him.
What does that mean?
Like, I don't know. We get so much of Joe Pesci
in the in between. I just dropped some lovely bones science.
Wow! Yeah, you did. Joe Pesci. There's a lot of Joe Pesci. There's a lot of Henry Hill. So
right.
I don't know. I don't have a problem with this kid, but I see what you're saying. Like we don't know a ton about him.
It's not just completely accepted it. But like just watching it the last time, I was like, wait a minute. He's not really playing a character. He's just like this guy. I don't know.
Right.
At the end, he is a little bit because he's kind of menacing. You know,
right.
That scene is disturbing every time I watch it.
The movie is so good.
And Lorraine Bracco. Yeah, no, it is super, super good.
Oh my gosh. Okay, think about the use of Derek and the Dominoes. And the piano part at the end of Layla.
Yes.
And think about the scene where they walk through the back of the what is that, the restaurant or the comedy club?
The super long, unbroken Steadicam shot.
Yes. And this is all going to connect to one of my movies coming up in the future here.
Yeah, no, it's filled with, like, iconic stuff.
And When a scene cuts fast and the music comes on strong, I mean, it just works. It just works.
Do you think it's your favorite Martin Scorsese movie? Or do you think it's his best movie?
That's tough. I just saw Raging Bull for the first time a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that.
Yeah.
We saw, what was the movie we saw when we saw Roger Ebert talk?
Who's That Knocking on My
Door? Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't even come into the conversation.
No. I'm just thinking of like how his film that was like his first or so like where they've gone, you know, how they've sort of grown.
They've evolved all the way to Hugo.
Right. I was so disappointed when Gangs of New York wasn't what I wanted
it to be.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I want this to be.
Yeah.
But then he won for
The Departed.
The Departed.
Yeah.
And I was so happy.
Yeah, definitely.
But it didn't feel like the right movie. But I like The Departed a lot.
I do too. But
I felt like we have to give this to him now. You know,
he's one of the few guys though where I feel like you could say a few different movies for like what you think is his best movie or what is his favorite. What is your favorite movie of his? And they would all be totally acceptable answers. Because on a different day, I could say Goodfellas or Raging Bull or Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
It would be between those three. And like the only other guy I can think of that's really possible is Steven Spielberg.
Okay.
That has made that many movies that are so good that, like, you know, whatever.
Right.
Okay, what's next?
Well, you know what story I didn't tell?
What story didn't you tell?
When Patrick and I first became friends.
Oh, yeah.
The local newspaper, the Daily Herald, had a contest. Or I don't even know if it was a contest.
I don't think it was a contest.
No, it was a contest. Yeah. It was just
because of that AFI nonsense was going
on, right? Yes, right. So it was like, okay, you love movies,
tell us your favorite movie.
Yeah, right. The Daily Herald hotline that
this
they had
right
set up.
This is right after AFI had put out their like 100 movies of all time. So it defined like that summer that we were first hanging out.
Right, which made sense.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, because we talked about movies all the time.
Yeah, we did. We still do. On the internet.
Oh my God. Married. So you had to call in and leave your name and your favorite movie, and you could say something about it if you wanted, and they were going to print it in the paper. Well, I remember that I was at my nannying job. I took care of these boys all day, all summer, and when I wasn't working at Blockbuster at night. And I told Patrick, hey, you like movies? You should call in too. And this is something he would never do on his own.
I totally never did it just because
even like now I feel like you wouldn't do that.
Hell no. You would tell me and I'd be like, no way, I'm not doing that.
But for some reason then you were like, okay.
I was working at the White Hen and I was like, I'll do what you say. So I totally did it.
You didn't even complain. It was just like, okay, yeah, we're going to do this. So you called in, and if I remember correctly, what was your...
The time, I think I named Blowout.
Yes, yes, definitely, definitely, because I had not seen Blowout at that point.
Yeah.
And so I was intrigued, and I told you we should watch some time or something. But
we never did.
Eventually.
Eventually.
Years later.
Yeah.
And I called in, and I said, Goodfellas.
Right.
And I talked about how great the soundtrack was, but I don't think I said enough to really make my point, or they cut me off, and basically it was just like, Goodfellas is my favorite movie. It has a great soundtrack,
period. That's
like period.
How it appeared in the paper.
Yes, that's all they printed. And so...
years later, when we, like, when you reconnected with Mike, and Mike and I first became friends,
right.
Somehow that story came up, and he had totally read that in the Daily Herald and remembered it.
Oh my gosh, Mike, that's so funny.
So he totally busted her for saying, I love Goodfellas. It has a really great soundtrack.
I totally connected you and Mike, though. I knew you'd be friends.
I know.
I just knew it.
I know.
Let's have a friendship podcast. Friendship.
What's your next movie?
All right, well, the next movie is Boogie Nights, which I was so annoying. I know. I like didn't want to put it on this list at all.
Why?
I'm annoyed with I don't know, because here's the thing. I saw Boogie Nights, I was so excited about Boogie Nights. I read so much about Paul Thomas Anderson. I was so into this. Again, by myself. I did not have one friend in college who probably even knew like that it was coming out, okay? I was in college during the time. I was so excited, waiting. I saw it in Milwaukee. I remember we were really near the front of the theater because it was packed, and I was staring up at the screen with my attention. Just, I was so into it the entire time. Frame by frame, I was thinking of Martin Scorsese, and I wasn't thinking that in a bad way. I was just like, okay.
Yeah, it definitely owes a lot to him.
Right, and I was making a lot of comparisons to Goodfellas. And so while Goodfellas may be a world that I sort of secretly wanted to be in for a day, mob lady or something, no. Boogie Nights doesn't really present a world that I wanted to take part in necessarily. The drug part. I mean, the rest of it sounds good. but it worked for me on every level. Again, his use of music, I know it sounds stupid, but I just thought it worked. I thought it helped tell the story. I love the performances. I love the characters. I love their quirks. I love how he makes them all come together. I love how it's this family in this... industry that doesn't really have a reputation for anything positive, I guess say. I don't know. It works. What can I say? I loved Boogie Nights so much.
Yeah, me too.
And I know. And then that was another, you know, thing that like when we became friends and started hanging out, it was kind of like, oh, you too? And I'm sure a ton of people around the world. But again, me and my life and going to college at the time, no one else was really into it. So I was alone until I met Patrick. And
I don't think at the time that we started talking or hanging out, like Boogie Nights did not have the reputation that it has now.
Mm-mm.
It had sort of just started showing up on HBO, but Paul Thomas Anderson wasn't who he was, you know, because he's made a couple more movies now, and now he's super respected. At the time, it was his second movie. He only had two movies out. Not everybody had seen it. Not everybody loved it. You know, a lot of people wrote it off. It's like, oh, that's that movie about porn. You know, it totally
isn't. Which bothered me so much,
right? No, that movie is so great. I would definitely count that among my favorite movies also. I can watch it over and over and over again. Right. I love it so much. I didn't know that much about
it.
All right.
Okay.
I didn't know that much about it going into it. I think I had read like one article in like my brother's issue of Details magazine. I hadn't seen Heart 8. I knew a little bit about it. Maybe I saw a trailer for it before I went to see LA Confidential. They showed a trailer for it. So I was like, that looks good.
Right.
It came out in super limited release. So I had to drive to Skokie to go see it.
Right.
And I went by myself on a Sunday night to Skokie. And it was one of those movies, and I've talked about this before, that there's a handful of movies that you come out of and you feel like a changed person in some way. And I don't know totally how to describe that, but like the first time I saw Reservoir Dogs, it kind of did that. And when I came out of Boogie Nights, it was like, it was such a different experience, the way that that movie worked for me. Mm-hmm. The whole sequence, there's this crazy long shot of just Mark Wahlberg totally still as Sister Christian plays and the fireworks blow up. And I was just sitting there by myself in this theater full of mostly older people, amazed at like how long he was going to hold that shot and what he was pulling off and how suspenseful it was. I just was like buzzing when I came out of that movie. I was so excited to tell everyone about it. And again, it's like, it took a little while before it opened up wide. And whenever you feel sort of that excited about a movie, or that connected to a movie, it's hard sometimes, I think, to recommend it to people.
Right.
Because even if they like it, they're not going to like it the way that you think they should or the way right. that you do. Or, you know what I mean? And then in some instances, and this is me maybe revealing what a small, petty person I am. But like sometimes then when somebody really does grab a hold of it, you almost feel like a little bit protective of it. Where you're just like, well, wait,
are you liking it for the right reasons?
Or just like, but I have such a special personal connection to that movie. How right. could you also?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, like, yeah. No, that makes sense.
So it's great that like they love it and you want to be supportive of that, but you're also like, but it's like finding out like a girl is cheating on you or something. She's like, but wait, how can you feel the same way that I do?
wait, what?
You know what I mean?
I lost it there.
Like this person that you love, you find out she loves someone else, and you're just like, but I don't understand. Like how... How can it make sense in my head? So that was my relationship with Boogie Nights, and yeah, meeting you was like the first person that I felt like saw it and connected to it the same way that I did without us ever having talked about it. You know, it was just like, oh my gosh, yeah, I totally love that movie. And you even went as Roller Girl for Halloween one year.
I did. Oh, I did go as Roller Girl. And I had to work the morning shift on Halloween at Blockbuster in Milwaukee, where I went to school at Marquette University. And I was in my roller skates the entire time at work. And then kept them on all day.
What a weird, sick fantasy that had to be for like some of the patrons of Blockbuster. You know what I mean? Because you're basically...
I wasn't thinking about it like that.
Going as a porn star, and you're like this fox roller skating around Blockbuster.
It was
roller
skating around Blockbuster.
Closest thing to roller. I don't know.
I didn't think about it like that though. When I dressed, I really
weren't doing it like to be a weird tease or something. But like, you know that has stuck with some people.
I don't know that, but apparently
I do
have like one great picture of me in that costume, but really I don't have a lot of pictures.
We should just post it with the podcast.
Okay, if I could find it.
All right, good.
But I stayed in my skates all day and then went out that night because Halloween is a big, I think, college in general holiday, and it was very big at Marquette. And I stayed in my skates all night.
Because if someone said you should take your skates off, what do you say? I don't
take off my skates. Yeah, wait, what is the exact line? I don't take my skates off.
I don't know.
Yeah. Do 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 do. I got a brand new pair of skates. Oh, because I also have the music cues memorized in that movie.
Yeah, great music in that movie.
And I remember my mom, after I saw that movie, my mom bought me the soundtrack for Christmas that year.
Volume 1 or Volume 2?
Both.
Nice.
Yes. Well, I don't know if they both out at the same time.
I feel like 2 came out a little bit later.
Yeah, I think I got one.
But I never had 2.
Yeah, I had both, but I think I got 1 for that Christmas and then 2 like whenever it came out. But I remember thinking that was really nice of my mom to
support my love for a movie about porn.
Yeah, yeah, right. It's not a movie about porn.
No, I know it's not.
But you know, the other thing with Boogie Nights is that at that point in my life, a lot of great movies that I had seen and liked, I had to catch up on. They were movies that came out like before I was old enough to go see them in the theater.
Right.
So a lot of like The Godfather and Goodfellas even, you know, I'm watching them by myself in my family room on the little tube TV or whatever. It wasn't that little, but you know. And so this was a movie that I was having that reaction to, but I was getting to see it on the big screen and experience it in that way.
Right.
And it maybe that even affected me, made me like it even more. I don't know, but... it's never left me. And some movies leave you 5 minutes after you walk out the door.
Right.
So these movies have never left me, which is why we're talking about them today. And our next film...
I like that you're just taking over.
It's
good. I'm going to go get something to drink.
Okay, go ahead. So I don't know if I've spoken on the podcast before about my love of documentaries, but I love documentaries, all kinds, educational ones, fun ones, anything. I love almost any documentary. Of course, we did see one once at the theater that was really silly. It was about like not paying taxes. And
that
the guy
was so horrible.
Yeah, and I feel bad because I think that guy passed away.
Did he?
I heard that.
Well, I'm not happy that he died, but yeah. He made a horrible movie.
It was just not.
What the, I don't remember what that movie was.
Not polished at all. It was really loud.
Oh, so
it was
terrible.
Something about was so not paying taxes.
Yeah, it was like a weird libertarian version of like
and
a Michael
Moore
movie.
Man, there were only like 5 other people in the theater.
And it was only showing maybe in like 3 theaters in the country, probably.
And and the other people in the theater, like I remember some people had like buttons on and they were all, this was like their thing. Like, yeah, we don't have to pay.
Right. Oh, it was so terrible.
But so, yeah, that wasn't the best. But I do love documentaries and I wish we could do a podcast on just documentaries one day.
That's probably not going to happen.
Sorry.
They're boring.
Fine. Can I write a list one day about my favorite documentaries?
Of course you can.
So make a
what
list.
Would
okay.
be what would be tops on that list? Would it be your number 2 movie?
My number 2? I'm already down to the top 2.
Yeah.
But it's not the top because we're not.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's make that point a few more times.
Let's talk about a film that came out in 1994.
All right. Any film that came out in
1994? Yeah, any film that came out in 1994. Go. All right.
Natural Born Killers?
Okay.
Might have been 1993.
Okay. All right. Well, then we can't talk about it.
All right.
A film that came out in 1994 called... Well, wait. Before I tell you the title, it's 171 minutes long. Who's signing up for this?
We forgot to mention the running times of all the other movies.
Well, but this one is extremely long.
It is.
It's especially long.
It is. Especially long.
Two ordinary inner city kids dare to dream the impossible, professional basketball glory in this epic chronicle of hope and perseverance.
No one else has read the back of the DVD cover boxes.
Filmed over a 5-year period. Hoop dreams!
Nice. I like how you just jumped right into the title.
That was on the back. Okay. Hoop dreams is one of the greatest films ever made.
Wow. Look at you. Look
not
at you,
holding
Ben
back.
Lyons.
And if you see, wait, Hoop Dreams is 171 minutes.
One of the greatest films ever. That's what he said about I Am Legend.
Hey.
One of the best movies ever made.
I know. But I can say that about Hoop Dreams.
You can, because.
Am I wrong?
It's as good as I Am Legend.
Am I wrong?
I don't think it's one of the best movies ever made.
Well, a certain person with your name who writes for DVD Verdict gave it a glowing review.
Yeah, no, it's a great movie, but I wouldn't say it's one of the best movies ever made.
Well, here's
but I don't
the reason. Here's the reason why
that.
I am saying that,
yeah,
and I'm
it's
sticking
funny that
to
you
it.
Think that.
Yes, I do. This movie, every time you watch it, and I've seen it quite a few times now, it gives you something more. You never feel bored. You never feel like, I've seen this already. I know what's going to happen. I mean, in movies that I love, I know the ending sometimes, and I'm just, you know, I'm still enjoying it. But, I mean, in Hoop Dreams, you feel these, I can't say characters, they are people. You feel these people. You feel their struggles. You feel their hopes. You feel everything that they're going through. This movie, you know, the filmmakers shot, as it says on the back of the DVD box.
For 170
over
minutes.
A 5-year period. And this was before we had all these little handheld cameras and all digital film and all this fun stuff that you could go out and shoot really easily, tons of footage. But they shot hundreds of hours of footage on their, you know, big cameras, right?
Huge.
Yeah, huge. Well, I imagine they had to be this was before we had...
Yeah.
Can the audience see the motions I'm making with my hands to tell the story? But they followed, they were really making a special for PBS, and it was probably...
Boring.
And just about, you know, boys in Chicago kind of hoping to make it in the NBA, and they started following these 8th graders who were just playing street ball, and they started talking to a recruiter who sort of worked for some of the high schools, the private high schools, and they just couldn't stop filming. The two boys that they focused on, Arthur A.G. and William Gates, they just felt compelled to like keep following these boys, following their families. It's incredible what they would, not just what the kids go through, but like their families and the communities, and then what they experience at the high schools and positives and negatives. And I know that in one of Ebert's reviews, he talks about how, you know, you're so into these boys and what they're going through and how genuine they are. And then many scenes later, you find out that this whole time, through all these struggles that the family's having, Arthur's family specifically in this situation, that his mother has been going to school and she graduates at the top of her class with like a nursing assistant sort of certificate or something like that. And It's just amazing. What I don't like the word amazing. I don't like to use it. I hate it when other people use it, but it fits here. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's so good, and it really. If you've seen it out there, listener, see it again. Watch it again. Watch it over and over again. The music is dates it. Ooh, it's dated. It dates. It doesn't hold up in terms of that. Like the style is so different.
So if you're gonna like call the Daily Herald, you wouldn't say it. I really love the music. I love Hope Dreams. I love the music.
The music is so like late. No, actually early. Yeah, I'm sorry. Like late 80s, early 90s. Hip hop, and yeah. it really just ages it so much. But and like what they're wearing, but there's something kind of fascinating about watching. Like there was such a and it is filmed in Chicago, and this is when the Bulls were winning year after year, and it's great. I love it. That's another reason I just play into it. It works for me. But everybody was kind of obsessed with basketball, and I think, well, what is everyone obsessed with now? And it's, I don't know. It doesn't seem good.
Ultimate Fighting, NASCAR. Kardashians?
Murder?
Themselves?
Kardashians, right. Yeah, themselves, right. I don't know. It seemed like everybody was sort of unified around their love of basketball.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, we're all so splintered now. But anyway.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because I feel like everybody's picks for their favorite movies. I mean, there are some that I think everybody has kind of held up as like, this I just think is a really good example of what a movie should be. This is just a really well-made movie. This has all right. the things in a movie that I would want, you know. And then I think there are other movies that, beyond just being childhood favorites, you know, our relationship to what our favorite movies are is super
emotional.
It's personal, you know.
Right.
It's certain movies just push exactly the right buttons, and anybody who knows you really well, as I think I do. And it's not even necessarily something we can articulate on the podcast,
right.
but like when you tell me that Hoop Dreams is one of your favorite movies, I 100% understand why that is. And I know every button in you that the movie is pushing. You know what I mean?
Right,
it's like
right.
there's so many elements of the movie that you respond to in little pieces in other forms, TV shows or other movies, you know, if it's, there's like this one little aspect or this other little aspect, but Hoop Dreams combines so many of those things into one movie that I think it's a great movie. Like I said, I personally don't, I won't call it, you know, this is one of the best movies ever made, but I totally, totally understand why you would pick it as one of your favorites.
Right. And you make a great point because I think emotionally, you're so smart.
Thank you.
God, you really summed up me.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was here to do, everyone.
No, but our emotional responses sometimes have more to do with how we walk out of a film, how we feel when we walk out of a film.
Yeah, right.
And
or
that's
what, or
actually,
what we bring into it.
Right,
you know?
Absolutely. And when we get to my number one, when we get to the next one, the last one I'll be talking about today.
Nice.
Emotional response has everything to do with it, you
yeah.
know? But in Hoop Dreams, you know, I was talking about how it's dated real quick about the music. Yeah. The music is so, wait, it's so dated. However, there is a piece, there is part of the score that plays during some of the big moments in the games, but not just the games, like when in their lives, when something's happening, getting accepted to college or making the shot or, just some of the voiceover when they're kind of talking about like where they've gone in the past few years, there's a piece of music and it just makes my heart swell. I can't stand it. I mean, I could cry every time I watch this movie.
I think there are some people too who maybe are resistant to it because of the running time, who are
yes.
resistant to it because it's a documentary, who are resistant
yeah.
to it because they think it's a movie about basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And if you fall into any of those categories, you really should give the movie a chance because it obviously supersedes all of those. It's more than just a documentary. It's more than a movie about basketball.
Absolutely.
I won't say it's more than 171 minutes because it is, in fact, 171
right.
minutes. But it's you know.
And if you get a chance, if you can watch the Siskel and Ebert segments that are included on the Criterion Collection disc.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting to see how they talk about it. They saw it first, practically.
Yeah, the movie was like a cause for them.
Right. And I don't think it would have gotten really the big release if they hadn't praised it the way they had.
Yeah, definitely.
So the segments are great, following from the very beginning, before it was released or anything, and they got to see it at a screening. And then when it came out again, and then when it was, when they were talking about what they thought should be nominated for Oscars that year, and they were pushing it because as it Best Picture, and then it ended up being completely shut out. And then they ended up doing an investigation on how the voting went that year and what happened with the documentary group or whatever the voting for the Oscars. And they actually changed how things were, their discussion of it actually led to an investigation that ended up changing the rules kind of for how you nominate and vote for documentary films. So it's fascinating. And then they talk about it as their best of the year. They talk about it as their, snubbed from the Oscars. I said that. And then
Roger Ebert might have named it the best of the decade.
Yes.
Yeah?
And he had, I believe this was after Gene Siskel passed away. Okay. Martin Scorsese was on. And Martin Scorsese talked a little bit about
DVD?
It too. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's all on there. It's so,
totally
so interesting.
I remember that show.
Yeah.
I believe I taped that show for you because you were like out of the state maybe.
Yeah.
And it was him and Scorsese talking about the best of the decade.
Right.
And I remember being blown away at some of Scorsese's choices, but whatever.
Right. Well, it's just the segment on Hoop Dreams, but it's really worth your time, I think.
All right.
Yeah.
And now for your last movie, your number one pick, your favorite movie of all time.
Oh my gosh. I quit. I quit this podcast.
I quit, Mr. White. okay, your final choice.
All right.
Your fifth one of your favorite movies of all time.
Oh my gosh. it's a nice little picture.
What's with the buildup every time?
I don't know. The Royal Tenenbaums. <There it is. laughs> another movie that I think the soundtrack was important to me.
Well, yeah, it is interesting that you picked so many movies that
music.
Do at least three. I mean, and Wes Anderson and Paul Thomas Anderson and Scorsese are all directors, you know, I would say, along with like Tarantino and maybe a few others that really use music in such a way. And I think, you know, they're all influenced by Scorsese, who was kind of one of the first guys to do it in that way. But it's interesting that, yeah, you're picking these people who use, you know, particularly pop music, not necessarily score.
Right.
In such a way that really helps create a mood or make a connection to
not
it.
Not just about something playing in the background or playing on a scene in a transition or like,
it's using a pop song as a score almost, you know? And they all do that.
Absolutely. I love The Royal Tenenbaums. When I saw it, I didn't want to stop seeing it, and I believe
This is the only movie on your list that you saw, like, since we have known each other. You know, we actually saw it.
Oh, right.
Together. All of your other choices came before.
Yeah.
BP, before Patrick.
You're right. We saw this together, and then we saw it
again. Do you remember, too, the fire alarm went off halfway through the movie, and we had to leave and go stand outside in the freezing
cold? Oh, my gosh, because, we had to drive. So it wasn't our local
theater.
Again,
it was limited release.
Right,
so,
and we drove to
like 45 minutes away. And we saw it, and halfway through a fire alarm went off. We had to go, it was the middle of December.
Really
we had to go stand outside. And again, you know, even with that interruption, it didn't matter.
No,
like the movie
it didn't
was
matter,
so awesome that.
And there are definitely movies where an interruption like that could pull you totally out of it
definitely.
And you don't get back into it. It's not good enough to keep you into it.
Definitely.
But yeah, and then we saw it when it came out at the theater close to us.
Yeah.
We saw it again. I don't know, at least once. I think I saw it at least three times.
I'm pretty sure I took my mom. Did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back in those days, we used to do that. Like we used to see stuff more than we don't really do that anymore because we can't. But if I liked a movie, I mean, I'd go five or six times. You know, not anymore.
Aww.
Yeah, what you gonna do? Act the fool.
Should I say it or not? He said it. Okay, so Royal Tenenbaums is another movie too that it just presents a style and a world that I kind of wanted to be in. Like I do have this sort of secret desire to be a part of like this.
A J.D. Salinger novel?
Yes. yes. Gosh, you do know me well.
Yeah, I do.
What if J.D. Salinger wrote a book that took place in Chicago?
Oh. It already couldn't work.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, but I want to be a part of sort of a quirky, eclectic family that, I don't know, they're all artistic in different ways, and they hang out in their house, and it's in some ways weird and non-functioning, and in other ways it's great, and I don't know. So part of it, again, is like it presents this world that I sort of want to be in, even just for a day. And the style I just respond to. And even I think in something that was written about this movie, possibly here in the Criterion Collection somewhere, it talks about how you either kind of get it or you don't, or you respond to it or you don't. And it's hard with a movie like this, when someone hates it, I have a really hard time not being angry. But yeah, I have definitely. To just understand, like, okay, they're coming from a totally different place, a totally different sensibility.
Well, and that's what I was saying earlier, you know, when you really love a movie, how you feel protective of it. And for a movie like Royal Tenenbaums, yeah, your immediate instinct, especially if you love it, is to be like, if someone hates it, you want to just think like, well, you don't get it.
Right.
But that may not be the case. Right. It may just be because the movie is so stylized and presents such a specific universe that, yeah, it may totally turn somebody off, and that's okay.
So I shouldn't hate those people.
You can. No, believe me, I probably do.
Yeah, you probably do.
I agree. Like, in theory, you shouldn't. But, like, I probably do. Right. You know. But I will say, and this isn't a knock on those people, if you're somebody who hates Royal Tenenbaums or whatever, but, like, I will say, when you meet somebody who really hates a movie that you hold so closely, like the Royal Tenenbaums especially, not a movie like Ghostbusters. Right. Because, like, somebody could hate Ghostbusters, and you guys could probably still get along. Right. But if somebody really hates the Royal Tenenbaums, you're probably never going to be great friends with that person. Right. And it's not because they don't like something that you like. It's because it speaks to who you are as people.
Right.
And it's okay, again, but I don't know. It's such a specific kind of movie. And we've done, this is now the third show that we've done in terms of like everybody's favorite movies. And the first two, I could sort of see a through line through everybody's choices.
Okay.
And yours, I can't really. Like, I don't think there's a consistent
thing. Keeping you on your toes.
Yeah. I don't think there's one consistent thing that runs through each of your choices. But at the same time, I feel like, again, maybe with the exception of Ghostbusters. And Ghostbusters is great. And so that's, you know, it belongs on anybody's list. But, like, with the exception of Ghostbusters, I feel like every one of your picks totally tells me something about you, you know, or tells somebody who's listening who doesn't know you something about you as a person. Okay. And I that's part of why I like talking about people's favorite movies or whatever, because somebody could tell me what their favorite movies are, and I feel like I would immediately understand them a little bit better, depending on what they were. If they were, and again, there's nothing wrong with like generic choices, but like if they were pretty generic choices, that's okay, but that also, I think, tells me something about who they are.
Right.
Namely, maybe that they're not super into movies, you know?
Right,
which
yeah,
is fine,
right.
But, like, when they are sort of ultra-specific, that tells me about a person. So, but back to Royal Tenenbaums, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I like the points you're making there.
Thank you.
you also liked this movie, if I recall.
Yeah, definitely.
You saw it many times.
It is, it's still my favorite Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah.
Last week we did the Eric Aschbacher's favorite movies, and Rushmore is in his top five.
Yeah, I like Rushmore too.
Rushmore is great. Royal Tenenbaums for me is sort of builds on what he did in Rushmore in a way that's more ambitious and just works better. And, and I'm always amazed at Royal Tenenbaums at the way that it walks this line between being really funny and really moving.
Right.
In the same scene, in the same two lines of dialogue, I don't know. And Gene Hackman in it is unbelievable, and not a guy who does a ton of comedy, you know. But he's so funny in the movie.
You know what cutting you off? I don't want to cut you off. But you know what I just realized?
I don't.
We were talking about Boogie Nights, and you brought up how I went as Roller Girl for Halloween one year.
Yes.
You and I went.
That's
as
right.
Royal Tenenbaums characters.
Yeah, we did. Margot and Richie.
Yep.
Yeah, we did. It was awesome.
We had it down pretty nice. Except for I didn't cut my hair to be her length.
And you didn't cut off your finger.
True.
You really
should have committed.
Really a paper thin commitment to your Royal Tenenbaums.
Gosh, I should have cut off a finger, cut off some hairs.
How do you feel about the rest of Wes Anderson's, his post Tenenbaums output?
Well, yeah. I mean, I love this movie so much that I think I want everything to like be just like that, to give me the same feeling. And while I do like his other movies, I didn't have that same, like, it wasn't as powerful, you know? I didn't leave, like, as moved, as mm-hmm. in the world. Like, mm-hmm. I couldn't get out of Royal Tenenbaums, the world of Royal Tenenbaums. I couldn't leave it. I couldn't stop thinking about it.
And it's weird, because he does keep sort of...
Life Aquatic?
Yeah. Oh, what Life Aquatic, Darjeeling Limited.
Yeah.
Fantastic Mr. Fox. Which, you know, we won't tell the story about Fantastic Mr. Fox right now, but we probably need to see that movie again, because when we saw it, it was in a theater full of furries. No joke, everyone.
No joke.
No joke.
Full of furries.
Who you were positive were actually, like, bank robbers or something.
I thought they were going to blow up the place. Yeah. I thought they were going to blow up the theater.
And yet, all they wanted to do was have sex in animal costumes.
I know.
Keep repeating Royal Tenenbaums. You know what I mean? He's basically mm-hmm. just kind of remaking that movie right. over and over again. But yeah,
but I agree. Just a style?
Yeah, but I feel like he's so locked into that style. So it's interesting because you say, you know, you want him to keep doing that, but then at the same time, he does keep doing that, right. and it's not exactly what you want.
Because every element of it needs to work. You know, like right. I don't mind him keeping in that style, in that tone. But the script needs to be as sharp or as meaningful or as moving or whatever, you know, every part of it needs to be. And like, I liked the Life Aquatic, but I didn't leave with that same feeling, you know, it wasn't.
No, definitely not.
No. And that was Bill Murray.
Yeah.
And I love Bill Murray.
Yeah.
But again, it just didn't. And then Darjeeling Limited.
Yeah.
I remember really loving that, seeing the trailer.
The trailer was great.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I think I liked the trailer better than the movie.
Yeah.
There's things in the movie I like. I don't dislike that movie.
But right.
It's definitely not Royal Tenenbaums.
Right. No, it's not.
And again, if I'm... Well, see, I don't know. I can't make the case. You are a person.
A woman.
You are.
Okay.
Like, what am I trying to say? You're big on empathy. Like, you love empathizing with people and with characters.
I think that's one of... Really, if I had to make a list of, like, my strengths as a person...
Yes.
I'm able to put myself in other people's... I feel like I can do that. I put myself in other people's shoes. And so when I'm watching a movie, I can...
I think it's your best pathy. Right? Right after that would be telepathy. Empathy followed by telepathy.
Okay. I know what you're about to say.
And again, like Ghostbusters, it doesn't really apply. And even I don't think Goodfellas is necessarily a movie that it applies. But I think Boogie Nights...
I understand what their side of it.
But Boogie Nights and Hoop Dreams and Royal Tenenbaums, again, if I'm looking for sort of a through line with your choices, I definitely see the way that you feel for all these characters, that they're all kind of sad. They're all kind of needing something in their life. They're all finding... this thing to fill a void, you know, mm-hmm. in Boogie Nights, it's not porn, it's sort of family, and mm-hmm. in Hoop Dreams, it's not necessarily basketball, that's just sort of a stepping stone to find this thing that they need. And Royal Tenenbaums, it's, you know, kind of family, I guess. Family is both the cause of and solution to the void in their lives. I don't know, but so it makes sense to me that these are three of your choices.
I think part of the reason why I love movies so much is because I am able to sort of you have to suspend disbelief, of course, but you have to also be able to kind of put yourself in that character's position and just think, okay, what if this was happening to me, or what if I was going through that? And some
you're
people,
way better at that than I am.
Thanks. I think.
No, it's. I mean,
but some people can't do it at all.
Yeah.
And it's not. I think it's not their fault.
And again, it's not a knock, but I think for those people, movies are just entertainment.
Right, right. That's what I was trying to say.
Which is
right.
But it's not quite the same thing.
Right.
But I don't even know if every movie that I love, if that's what I'm doing necessarily.
Right.
But then what is it that
I'm
loving?
Sure, I don't know if I'm not putting myself in Henry Hill's shoes, really.
Right, but even like Marty McFly, I'm not putting myself in Marty McFly's shoes, I don't think. I wanted to be Marty McFly, Michael J. Fox, when I was a kid. I still wouldn't mind it.
Right.
But I don't know if it's necessarily empathy that makes me love Back to the Future so much. I don't know, necessarily.
Well,
but you're definitely way better at it than I am.
Thanks.
I don't know.
If that's a compliment. I don't know.
It's not a compliment.
Right, no, I know.
It's certainly something
thanks
that I
love
about you.
Thanks for recognizing that about me. Well, thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks.
Anytime.
We're not too schmoopy, right?
I hope
we
not.
We cut way back
everyone.
On the schmoop.
We try. So those are five of your favorite movies.
We didn't even get to talk about John Waters' Hairspray.
No, we didn't.
We didn't get to
talk
about
Grease. We'll do it on a future podcast.
Grease. and Grace right. in a way that is not the way that other girls might say Grace. It's
right. But again, it's kind of that's kind of a childhood favorite. And Ghostbusters kind of fills that right. void, but I would suggest that Ghostbusters holds up as an adult
right.
far better than Grease.
Right,
does
absolutely,
as an adult.
Which is why I talked about it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you have a lot of movies that are
I know.
That are favorites.
I know.
Bring It On.
What?
Is a favorite. Adventures in Babysitting.
Hey.
Is a favorite.
I could watch Home Alone.
I'm making these up, over by the way. Well, these are not her favorites.
No, they're not. But I mean, I could watch Home Alone a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
I could watch Pretty Woman a lot. In fact, every time it's on TV, guess who leaves it on?
Not
this
you.
Guy, yeah, this right. guy.
Sometimes it's just to make you smile. Other times it's because, how can you turn off Pretty Woman? What's
know.
Wrong with you? If
people
you
with hate Pretty in their heart.
That's exactly right. Anyway, thank you guys for another... fun year at F This Movie. This is the end of our. It's the
is
end of our.
Is this really
first...
the last podcast of 2011?
Well, sure. The year is over in just a few days.
my goodness.
This is the end of
where
our first full year on the podcast. Our second
wow.
year, you know, in general, because we were around in 2010.
Uh-huh.
But this is our first. The end of our first full year on the podcast. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, and thanks to everybody for listening. This year, we'll be back next week with another. Episode. We probably are going to take a break actually from the favorite movies series to talk about to do some year end stuff, best of the year, underrated, overrated, those shows, and then we'll get back to the favorite movies series.
Okay.
But thanks for talking with me, Bew.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, listeners.